91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. We're in the era of massive baby boomer retirements, but many of those entering the golden years won't have the income promised decades ago. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. The 401k plan was birthed in the 1970s. The financial services industry promised higher returns and cheaper administration. They foresaw Social Security going broke and claimed there were no financial alternatives. But participants bear all 401k financial risks, lose their social insurance of risk pooling, and can seldom contribute enough for good retirement returns. Working more years could be a necessity. We'll speak with expert James Russell, author of Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis. Stay tuned. Open phones ahead after the news.
Seven minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman on this Monday afternoon. Well, if you've been maintaining a 401k for retirement funding, this hour's guest has some news for you. For most people, a do-it-yourself retirement plan has been a bad idea since its introduction in the 1980s.
Joining us now via Skype is retirement expert James Russell. His latest book is Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis. He's based in the village of Willimantic, Connecticut. Welcome to you, James Russell.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
Well, it's good to have you. So what is this retirement crisis, and what do you think caused it?
Well, the crisis is very much real. According to the Federal Reserve's figures, the average person approaching retirement with a 401k plan has only $100,000 in it. $100,000 sounds like a lot, but it will only get you on average $4,000 a year during your retirement. The causes of it, I believe the number one cause is the massive switchover beginning in the early 80s from defined benefit pensions, traditional pensions, to 401k type plans. And there are a lot of reasons why the 401k plans just don't work in terms of providing retirement security.
Well, let's look at a little history. What exactly is a 401k and how did it come to be?
Well, 401k is just a number in the Internal Revenue Service code that came in the end of 1978 when an accountant named Ted Benna wanted to find a way that people could save tax-free for retirement. Because the traditional idea was that the best way to have retirement security was to have the so-called three-legged stool, where you had your Social Security, you had a traditional pension, and then you had some savings on the side. And so he was trying to shore up the third leg. But then in the early 1980s, corporations, employers began to substitute the third leg for the second leg. That is, they began to just phase out their or end completely their traditional pensions and substitute 401ks. Now, the difference between the two is that traditional pensions are like insurance. That is, you pay a kind of premium each month, and then that insures you against outliving your income. With 401ks, you're supposed to put money into them, invest, then have enough money to be able to live off of that in retirement. And what we're finding is, number one, people can't accumulate enough to support their retirement. And number two, they really don't have very good options once they do retire for what to do with the money so that it lasts for the rest of their lives.
Tell us more about 401s. We only hear of 401ks, but there are other letters also.
Oh, yeah. 401k is just the one that's most well known, so it's become a kind of metaphor for this whole crisis. But you have a 401a, you have 403b, 457. All of them share the approach where people are supposed to build up savings to finance their retirement. I think the best analogy that I've come across is that is for fire insurance for your house. Nobody saves up enough money to rebuild their house in case they have a fire. Rather, they buy a premium so that all of the people who have houses, you know, not all of them are going to have houses burned down, so that you can share the risk. And with 401ks, they're basically asking you to self-insure for retirement, and that's just something that's not, you know, very possible.
So why did they switch from traditional pensions? What were the advantages for companies?
Well, one of the things that I found out that was something I didn't know when I started all of this was that actually traditional pensions are cheaper for companies than 401ks. That is, if you are looking for a set amount of retirement income for an employee, it's much more efficient to do it via a traditional pension than a 401k. My best estimate is it costs about twice as much in investment to reproduce what a pension does doing it via 401k. Now, so you might say, so why would companies phase out of them? Mm-hmm. Well, it's in large part because the payments are unpredictable for 401ks, not for 401ks, for traditional pensions, because you have to make a payment that's based upon actuarially what's happening in the stock market, how investments are coming in to keep up a certain level of income in the account. Now, there's another reason, which is much, I think, worse reason, is that once you move into a 401k, you're free to actually reduce your contributions. You weren't free to do that under federal regulations if you were an employer with a traditional pension. Now you can reduce them. So after the 2008 crisis, something like 25% of all employers in the United States either completely eliminated their matching contribution or lowered it significantly. The other thing that's very important and is seen, you know, sort of via an advantage for an employer, is that once you get out of the pension, you really have no responsibility whatsoever to the employee. You just make a contribution and then they're on their own. So if you hand the contribution to a financial services company that manages to siphon off a lot of fees, there are a couple of very good frontline features on that, the employer really doesn't have to worry about that very much.
Wall Street seems to be the bad guy in a lot of financial issues and debacles. Is Wall Street the bad guy here?
Well, I'm not sure I would use the language bad guy, but I would use the language that Wall Street is acting in its interest, which is to maximize the amount of profits that it can make off of these accounts. And the financial and services industry has expanded very significantly since the 1980s, when this became the new way to finance retirement.
Did you happen to read the article in the New York Times a couple of days ago, Finding and Battling Hidden Costs of 401k Plans?
I did. And yes, I'm very familiar with what they're talking about in that the average person in a 401k plan loses minimally 25% of the gain to fees. And so you have a lot of people who are trying to figure out how to make those fees more transparent. I mean, I might venture to say that any listener to this program who's in a 401k probably cannot understand their statements when they come back. You've got pages and pages of numbers. It would take a really skilled accountant. It would be very challenging for a skilled accountant to find out where all the fees are, where all the drain-offs are. Now, I think that that's very important, trying to get a little more transparency in that, maybe lower the fees. But I think that's only part of the problem. The problem is really the approach to retirement, this kind of individual do-it-yourself, where you're supposed to completely self-finance for retirement. That's another big chunk of why people are not going to get retirement security out of these plans.
Would you explain that, what you mean? You said the more fragmented and individualized we become, the easier it is for the big financial powers to control the system to their advantage. How do you mean?
Well, if you have one account that has 100,000 people in it, it's much more cost effective to manage that account. If you have 100,000 individual accounts, then you can have them all. It becomes much more expensive. But one of the parts of this that I think is really revealing is that the 401k type approach breeds a real kind of consciousness of individualism, that it's your responsibility. If you reach retirement and you don't have enough, then it's your fault. You didn't invest right. You didn't save enough. We have a whole savings crusade that's out there saying that it is your responsibility. On the other hand, if you're in a traditional pension and there's some problem with the pension, it breeds much more of a sense that we need to work together to try to figure out how to solve that problem. Like, I think if you compare, for example, Social Security, which is something that I think is the most successful retirement plan we have in the United States, that whenever there's some sort of a move, political move on Social Security, there are a whole set of organizations that spring up to defend it, not just individuals, but organizations.
Do you think the elections last week will have any effect on Social Security or on this crisis, as you call it?
Remains to be seen. One possibility is that we could get a revival of the so-called grand bargain, where the Obama administration would offer to lower Social Security benefits in return for the Republicans allowing an increase in taxes elsewhere. That was what was around the Simpson-Bowles plan, which never made it into Congress, but it was definitely an attempt to lower Social Security benefits. We don't know whether that's going to happen in the final 2 years of this administration, but what I do know is that ever since the mid-1990s, there have been plans coming out of both political parties to reduce Social Security benefits.
We're speaking with James Russell. He's a professor of sociology at Eastern Connecticut State University and a retirement expert and financial author. He's written Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis, and we'll be back after a break.
And we return. It is today's Topical Currents, 21 minutes past 1 o'clock. Joseph Cooper along with Bonnie Berman. We resume our conversation with financial retirement expert James Russell. We're talking about his latest book, Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis. We'll have a link to Mr. Russell and also his book at our Facebook page, the Topical Currents Facebook page. Mr. Russell, tell us about the term the tinfoil handshake as opposed to the golden parachute or handshake.
Well, I use that phrase in the book because I was really just dealing with part of what the book was about, which is really a story within a story. It starts with me realizing that the 401k type plan that I'm in is going to give me retirement benefits that are less than half the benefits of colleagues who are in the traditional pension. And In the process of all of that, at one point the state offered an early retirement plan where they offered us $5,000, and then they offered people in the pension plan three extra years of credit, which was worth something like $100,000. So I just used the phrase, we were calling this a tinfoil handshake, the $5,000.
And we'd like to hear from you, our listeners, if you have a 401k, how's it working for you, or hasn't it worked for you? Or do you have a more traditional pension? Same questions. And do you want some advice from James Russell? You can call us 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576, or email radio@WLRN.org. And just one note that when you call in, you won't hear anybody answer. You'll just be put on hold.
We have a little technical problem.
Right. So you'll be on hold, and we'll try and get to as many of you as possible. 1-800-743-9576.
And James Russell, so a lot of people are just have to choose between having a lower standard of living or in retirement or working longer.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's like they reach retirement and they go off their own fiscal cliff. I mean, the problem is that a lot of people really don't understand how the system works. And so they think that they're, on track to a nice retirement income, but there's a real difference between how much money you have in these accounts and how far they will take you in retirement. And it's that second question of how much do you actually need that people are very, very fuzzy on understanding it. So, yes, that is the problem, is that we're in a situation where a lot of people are having to lower their standards of living quite dramatically.
I'm a little confused about this recommended 4% withdrawal from a 401k. Mm-hmm. Is that all you're allowed to take, or is that what's just recommended?
Well, when you have a 401k and you retire, the question becomes, what do you do with it? And there are about two or three things you can do with it. One is you could buy an annuity, which is a product that life insurance companies sell, where you would give them your money and they would promise you a certain amount of income for the rest of your life. The problem with those annuities is they're very expensive. They're not very good deals. Second is you can just keep managing your account and then withdraw from it a certain amount each year to live on. And that's where the 4% comes in. It's advice that's done by financial planners that if you want your money to last for the rest of your life, you shouldn't take more than 4% out. So, I mean, you can do the math. If you have $1 million, which very, very few people have in these accounts, the most you could take out each year would be $40,000.
And we have a lot of calls, of course. People are very, very concerned about their retirement future. And we have our first caller up. Who are we speaking with? Hello there, Hello? Topical Currents. Who's this?
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead. What's your name?
My name's Frank.
Hi, Frank. Go ahead.
Okay, good. I'm listening to this discussion right now, and two things that have come up, the two major points are that 401ks aren't what they're cut out to be. They came about in the 1970s and 1980s. It was the time of the last so-called Great Recession that we had, that we talked about then as a Great Recession. And the idea that Social Security benefits might have to be reduced, it sounds like you're getting hit two ways on this, that people who are elderly, or maybe, should I say the future elderly, are going to be hit with this. It seems like the 401k, in a way, their original thought is that it might still work to help offset anything that might happen to the to Social Security.
James Russell, your feelings? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think it's exactly the opposite, that we need to expand Social Security benefits to offset the failure of the 401k to provide enough retirement income.
You say that retirement shenanigans, James Russell, of course, the retirement shenanigans are the perfect swindle. Why?
Well, if someone tells you, give me your money, I'll take care of it for the next 35 years, and then at the end of 35 years, you'll have a nice retirement. More than likely, you know, like in any good swindle, at the end of 35 years, when you realize that this wasn't true, that person is long gone. You have no way to recoup your losses. Now, I'm using the word swindle in a kind of institutional sense, not in a sense of individuals.
We have an emailer, Bruce. Given that the workforce is more mobile than ever, is not the 401k better than a pension, since a pension often requires employment for 5 or 10 years to achieve even partial vesting?
Well, indeed, one of the selling points of the 401k is its portability. That's actually turned out to be a little bit dicey, because what's happened with a lot of people with 401ks is when they've lost jobs, they've ended up cashing out their 401ks as a kind of alternative unemployment insurance. So there's a lot of what people call leakage in these plans. But in Connecticut, we managed to design a pension that actually has portability with it. So it is possible to have a traditional pension that has a kind of portability feature. Also, the biggest pension in the United States is Social Security, which is, of course, completely portable because 94% of all employees are in it. So as you go from job to job to job, you don't lose anything. So I think that the portability argument, it's very important, because you're absolutely right. The workforce is more mobile. Any retirement plan has to have portability in it if it's going to reflect that reality. But it could be done through pensions as well.
And we're going to take another call. We have a Topical Currents listener on. Would you sign in, please? Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Are you there? Okay.
We're having some technical problems if you just tuned in.
Hello. There you are. Okay, go ahead. What's your name?
Hi. My name is Pablo Parent. Okay. And I'm an employee with Miami-Dade County, and people who work for the state of Florida have what they call FRS, which is the Florida Retirement System, which is one of the few pensions that are, you know, like a healthy pension where it's not in deficit. And what I wanted to ask the gentleman is, what would be better, stay in the pension or at the end of my service to take the lump sum and invest that money, you know, on my own?
Well, without knowing the amounts of money that are involved, I mean, I can't, you know, answer that exactly.
It depends on your situation.
But I would say in almost all cases, it's better to stay in the pension. But again, it kind of depends on how old you are, too. But if you are, for example, going to leave and then maybe 10 years later rejoin the state, you might want to keep your credits in that pension system.
Okay, thanks for calling. We need to take another break on Topical Currents. We're talking about, well, the retirement crisis and 401ks. We're speaking with James Russell, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, and James Russell. He's a retirement expert and a professor of sociology at Eastern Connecticut State University and a financial author. He's written several books. His latest is Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis. Again, we're having some technical difficulties, so when we come to you, we can't say your name because we don't see it. So that's why when we say you're on the air, we ask you what your name
is. So go ahead and say hello, and we'll see if you're the one.
James Russell, can a 401k ever be good?
I actually think no.
Okay.
Because the whole approach is based on a fallacy that people can save up enough money to finance their retirement. I mean, I think you could have something like a 401k as a supplement but we need to really shore up the guaranteed retirement systems, and that's what's really lacking right now in the United States.
On a personal note, James Russell, in the book you talk about that you're quite a saver. You say some people even call you a cheapskate, right. And you've been paying into your IRA, and you're still set to maybe receive only 40% of what you thought you'd be getting.
Yeah, I was trying to address the whole argument that these things only fail when people don't save enough. And in fact, I save a whole lot, and yet I came up short at the end of it. And I also had a plan that was very generous, that the state gave 8%, which is much, much higher than the average match of 4% for employers. And so if this system was going to work for anybody, it should have worked for me, but it didn't work. Now, one of the things that the book, which is, by the way, written for general readers, is it tells the story of how we actually managed to move from our 401k plan into the state's pension fund, going the opposite direction of most employees in the United States who are being pushed out of pensions into 401k plans.
Do progressive European nations, say, have had this retirement trouble at all funding it for their older citizens?
I mean, you know, there are many countries in Europe, but most countries in Western Europe, anyway, still have the major amount of retirement comes from traditional pensions. So when the 2008 crisis hit, it was not a problem for pensioners at all, nor was it a problem for people who were approaching retirement. But the United States, a good part of Latin America, and some parts of Eastern and Central Europe have moved over into this type of investment scheme type approach to retirement. And that's where people had a lot of problems.
I'd like to go back to that article and some of the fees that we talked about. They talk about middlemen taking fees for plan record keeping, administration, fund management, commissions, marketing fees, 12B1 marketing fees, whatever those are, insurance-related charges, wrap fees, and transaction expenses. By the way, what's a 12B1 marketing fee?
I have no idea.
That sounds like a phone bill reads.
Yeah. Well, my question is, aren't there regulations on disclosure requirements that they disclose all the fees and make it not so that an accountant can't understand the statement?
The last I've looked into it is that there was a bill in Congress to force more disclosure, which was heavily fought by the financial services industry and has still not been approved by Congress. It is very unlikely to be approved.
Oh. Again, if you want to join in the conversation, if you have a 401k, if it's worked for you or it hasn't, or traditional pension, same questions, our number, 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. Again, you'll be put on hold, but you won't hear anybody answer just because of some technical difficulties today.
But we're at home.
But we're here.
Okay. And we have another topical currents caller on the line.
Hello, my name is Ginny.
Very good, Ginny.
I want to let your presenter today know that he's speaking to people in the state of Florida who have Rick Scott as their governor, shamefully. But anyway, there's no retirement for teachers or any new employees. They get zero. They get zero towards retirement, period. It is totally on them to save. There's no matching. There's nothing. My husband is a firefighter. He does have a 457B, I believe. The only benefit he gets, he invests. It's tax deferred comp, is what it is.
You were saying new teachers, because teachers who've been in the system.
New teachers,
right?
Okay. Anybody who's been hired since the second year of Rick Scott's last term, the term that he just served is finishing up now. Anybody who's newly hired, all the newly hired. People who have, they used to get 3%. I mean, you know what it is? It's a cost of living. Plus, it's a cost of living increase is what I'm talking about. During retirement is what I'm talking about. Actually, I'm lying. But there's no matching, is my point. There's no matching if you save money. I heard him say there was an average 4% matching in the state of, I think, Connecticut, he said. There's no matching here.
James, what?
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that.
Well, there are two different things that are going on here. Again, I don't know the full situation of public employees in Florida or state employees in Florida. I actually know a little bit about it. With the FRS, the Florida Retirement System, which is a traditional pension, there's no issue of matching because it's just not that type of system where you build up individual money. What the caller is suggesting is that new employees are not being allowed into that system and are being required to go into a 401k type system in which there is no matching contribution. And again, I don't know the details of that, but if that is true, that's an absolute disaster for new employees. The same sort of thing happened in Alaska. There's a whole campaign around the country of very conservative organizations to try to end public pensions for state employees and to substitute 401k type plans. And again, the only beneficiary of that is going to be the financial services industry, certainly not taxpayers and not public employees themselves.
In the middle of the last decade, there was quite strong sentiment and a movement to privatize Social Security. Did the 2008 financial debacle kind of put that on hold, at least? When people realize, well, we don't want to invest our retirement in Wall Street, look what's happened.
Well, the whole privatization effort really begins around 1994 with the World Bank, which makes a report called Averting the Old Age Crisis, where it calls upon countries that have programs like Social Security to shift them over to privatized investment plans. And the Clinton administration was planning on doing that, but then had to drop it for a number of reasons. Then the Bush administration in 2005, that was the top domestic agenda item. And the more that the president explained this to people, the more opposed they became. And he had to drop it within about 8 months of introducing the whole idea. The Obama administration has taken a kind of indirect path toward it. They attempted to cut the cost of living adjustment so that it really doesn't matter whether they're Republicans or Democrats. There are all kinds of attempts to do this, either directly or indirectly, because the more that you can either freeze Social Security benefits or reduce them, you leave people with the only option of going into 401k type plans or saving more through them, which do not pay as much in terms of security.
We have an emailer. Mary says her company's 401k did work well for her. She began participating when it was first offered at the maximum allowable contribution, 12% of her gross, and the company matched 3% of her salary, and she was not making a six-figure salary. When she retired in 1999, she had $500,000, which she rolled over in traditional IRA. And it's almost doubled since. The S&P has gone from 102 to over 2,000 since 1980. So having her 401k in an S&P index fund worked just fine. And since retiring, she's had the money in a self-directed discount brokerage account and doing okay. Any comment?
Well, I think it is. I don't think I would argue that it's absolutely impossible for something like that to happen. But I would say that the vast majority of people in 401ks do not have that experience, and we know that from the studies that have been done. I would also say that had she had the option when she retired to take that money and pay at actuarial value for a pension, she would have done even better than she did. Because that's what we've been able to do in Connecticut. So we know the actuarial values of these accounts.
And we move along to some more callers. This is Peter in Davie. Hi there.
Good morning, or I should say good afternoon, rather. I wanted to ask, the gentleman made a reference to a frontline specials that have been done on this, and there were some points made on that that I would like him to address. There was the gentleman that founded Vanguard Funds, and he indicated that and made reports about the size that of fees that would be taken out, but I guess he suggested that a fund like his, which is a low-cost mutual fund, may be more beneficial. And I guess I just will take my answer off the air to hear what Mr. Russell has to say about whether something like that, where the fees are guaranteed to be low, could be advantageous.
Well, it's certainly better to have low fees than high fees, but it just doesn't resolve the ultimate problem, which is how to get retirement security. So, and I don't even want to say it's a step in the right direction. I just say it's sort of less bad. So, I would agree with that. But one of the problems I had with the front line was that it didn't go into that it's the whole approach that is the problem, not just the fees.
We're speaking with James Russell. He's a retirement expert and professor of sociology at Eastern Connecticut State University and a financial author. He's written Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis. We have lots of calls, and we'll try to get to as many as we can after this short break.
Monday afternoon is today's topical current. Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman, and we're speaking with retirement expert James Russell. He has a new book called Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis. Let's take more of your calls. We've got Nikki in Miami Beach. Hi.
Hi, great show. Thank you for having it. Mm-hmm. Two questions, a two-part, and I don't mind taking it off the air. What is the status of the Pension Guarantee Fund? And that I always hear is like in arrears. And also, I managed finally to save like $1.8 million for retirement, and I'm ready to retire. What should I do with the money? I mean, should I go into the bond market now? I'm in about 20% into bonds, and I'm very confused. I never had a 401k, but it's in Roth, and it's in regular SEP IRA, Roth, and then the bulk of it's just in cash and stocks, which I've been selling off because I can't afford to have the market go down again with the stock market. So I'm getting everything out of there. So any ideas and any information?
Well, the Pension Guarantee Benefit Fund is set up to guarantee pensions, usually multi-employer pensions. And it is definitely in arrears, as you put it. It needs to have an infusion of funds. There have been mistakes that have been made. So that's definitely one of the things that Washington needs to look at, because I don't think it's in anybody's interest to have a series of pension funds go broke, you know, and then leave a lot of people in the lurch. So that's definitely a problem that's sitting out there that needs to be dealt with. As for what to do with your money, I am not a financial advisor in that sense. But what I can talk about is very generally the problem is there aren't very good options. And then I'll tell you what would be a good option if we could have that reform. Yeah, the first thing you can do with your money, of course, is to just leave it in some fund and, take out withdrawals to live on. The second is you could buy an annuity, which we were talking about before. The problem is that they're not a very good deal, but undoubtedly with that amount of money, you could probably get an annuity that would pay, quite a bit of money to it. What I would like to see as a reform that I don't hear too many people talking about is to create from Social Security, maybe from state employee pension funds, the possibility of nonprofit annuities, so that people with 401ks, IRAs, etc., when they reach retirement, that they could roll that money into something that would get them, a guaranteed amount of money for the rest of their lives, whether they live a long time, whether they live a short time. And it wouldn't lose so much money that that the commercial annuities do, because there's so much profiteering that goes on with them.
We have an emailer. How can a 401k plan be improved? This is Renee. What are the alternatives? I'm asking from both an employee and a benefit administrator standpoint.
Well, the improvement, whether we're talking about within the 401k approach, obviously the fees are one possible way to improve it. Certainly from an employee point of view, to have a higher match, to have more education of people. But the point that I keep trying to make is that even with the best of all of those things, they're still not going to deliver retirement security for the vast majority of people. Much, much better is to create a traditional pension plan if the goal is to create retirement security.
Well, do you see companies going back to that, or are they pretty much on the road to extinction?
They're not on the road to extinction because Social Security is indeed a defined benefit plan, and that's not going toward extinction. Most state employees and local employees still have defined benefit pension plans. They are fighting to retain them. It's in the private sector that we're seeing a great decrease. But even in the private sector, there's still about 20% of employees still have pension plans. So I don't think they're quite at extinction yet, but there's an enormous amount of pressure against them.
And another caller. This is Edward in Miami. Edward, we have little time. Go ahead. Edward. Heard him there. Edward, go ahead. So we'll move along to Katie in Fort Lauderdale. Hi.
Hi. Well, my husband does not have, he has a 401k and he has matching. Should we still do it? Or what should we do instead? What would be the best bet now? We're both 40.
Well, definitely still do it because you have no other option at the moment. But for people in that situation, I would argue, yes, you know, keep doing that. But also look for, let's say, if you can change a job to where there's a pension. Be very alert to all the attacks on Social Security, because that's going to be an important part of your income when you do retire. And try to support the campaign to expand Social Security benefits. So there are things to be done, not just in terms of the plan itself, but the larger picture of retirement security in the country.
What could I do if I were 55 years old? I look at my IRA and realize it's going to be a struggle for me to make it. What can I do now for when I retire anywhere from 62 to 66?
I don't have any magic solutions for that. I mean, that's sort of like a get-rich-quick scheme, you know, to do that. I mean, you know, learn how to live on less money is about, you know, all you could do if you're in a situation like that.
Nobody wants to do that, though.
No.
So what other myths about 401ks have we not yet talked about that you would like to talk about, or have we covered them all?
Well, there are many of them that are out there. I think overall, when they started, there was the myth that people would do much better in 401ks than traditional pensions. But then when we get to the late 1990s and people are beginning to retire under them and find out that they're getting dramatically less, then the argument shifts that, oh, well, the 401k is the only sustainable plan, that the pensions are too expensive. But that turns out that wasn't true either. So when you look underneath all of this, it's really a question of who benefits. And certainly employees don't benefit, retirees don't benefit, but there's a huge financial services industry that has benefited very handsomely from getting control of the collective retirement savings of many people in the country.
We had a question about a B1 toll fee. Jason, Cooper City, he's got the answer quickly. Hi.
Hi, my name is Jason from Cooper City. Financial professional in training. I know you have a very little time, but a 12B1 fee is this. A 12B1 fee is, let's say if I open an account with someone acting as an agent, each time the customer puts in money in their fund, I, being the broker, would get a commission off of that. That would be a 12B1 fee. Hope that helps for Bonnie. And also, I hope that still, that's pretty much it. And if you're going to retire and try to put your money somewhere, just put it somewhere where it over where it's more than inflation, because inflation is about 3-4% every year. That's my tip to anyone out there.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for your call.
All right, we have an emailer, Jertley. I'm a baby in our system, 26, but I've been working with W-2s for 10 years now. Will I see every dollar that has gone into my Social Security? And in your experience, how much do you believe the Social Security will exist when I reach the age?
I would say yes, absolutely. Social Security is the best deal you have going. Let's say you're 30 years old and you have two kids. That's worth at least $500,000 to you right now, because should you die, those two children will be supported until they're 18. We have to remember that Social Security also includes a disability program. It also has a survivors program in it, so that you get a lot for your money even before you retire in terms of insurance. Social Security is also very solvent. Yes, it does have some actuarial problems over the long term, but those are very easily fixed. One of the easiest way to fix them is to remove the cap on income that's taxed. The first $117,000 of labor income is all that's taxed. Rich people make much, much more than that. And that's one of the reform proposals that's being pushed by the real defenders of Social Security.
And one more quick question about a 401k Roth. Is that preferable?
A Roth?
As opposed to a traditional IRA.
That's totally an individual situation. In general, if you're going to have less money when you retire than when you're working, you don't want a Roth. Okay. Because the tax break is more valuable to you.
Well, we've been speaking with James Russell. He's a professor of sociology at Eastern Connecticut State University and financial author and a retirement expert. He's written Social Insecurity, 401ks, and the Retirement Crisis, and we'll have links to him and his book on our website, WLRN.org, and on our Facebook page. Thank you so much, James Russell.
Thank you, Joseph, and thank you, Bonnie. It's been a great interview.
Thanks.
And thanks for listening. Topical Currents is produced by Richard Ive, technical direction from online producer Paul Leary. Thanks to our program callers as well, and those we couldn't get on the air, we apologize too. If you visited the Topical Currents Facebook page, we have program-related links, photos, discussion, and more. There are free audio archives at our website, that's WLRN.org. Be sure to join us tomorrow for a visit by retired U.S. Army Lieutenant Colonel Dr. John Nagle. He was a tank commander for 20 years, including a tour in the Gulf War. He's an expert on counterinsurgency warfare and served on the 2010 Quadrennial Defense Review Panel. He was a West Point and Rhodes Scholar, Oxford University graduate. John Nagle's latest book is Knife Fights, a memoir of modern warfare in theory and in practice. It's an important topic today. If you want someone else to listen to it, a friend or relative, be sure to go to our website, WLRN.org, for a free audio archive. You can click on radio and go through the process. You'll get there. This is Joseph Cooper, along with Bonnie Berman. Stay tuned for Here and Now next from NPR News.